So, how are you?
Well, I'm slowly recovering.
It was a lovely weekend, wasn't it?
It was a lovely weekend. You know, we did drink quite a bit, I think, really.
Did we? I don't remember.
Well, let's put it this way. I went for a blood test today, and I had to tell the nurse, you know, don't use any matches. Don't light anything near that. It'll go up. It's flammable.
Well, it's not big and it's not clever.
No, I feel very ashamed.
As you should.
Welcome everybody to episode 280 of the Midfaith Crisis Podcast. My name's Nick Page, and there on a screen is Joe Davis.
Hello!
Hello.
Great to see you, buddy. What a lovely weekend.
Mm.
Tulip Festival, a wildlife and wetlands, a Thai meal, lots of talk, lots of fun, the odd drink. Lovely.
It was great. Yeah, it was good. Your Mexican food was...
Thank you.
Lovely.
Well, I learnt from the best, so thank you.
Yeah, lovely. What were they? Tacos?
Yeah, they were tacos, yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, tacos.
Yeah. Mm.
Yeah, very nice.
Mm, thank you.
It was lovely to see you, and the weather was surprisingly good.
It was.
And we talked quite a lot of podcasty things, but as usual with any kind of planning, it didn't really happen.
It did. We even had a lovely intro, which we haven't bothered using.
We thought it was lovely at the time of recording it.
Which was about, what, 11 o'clock at night?
Yes, something about that, yes. Turns out...
It's a lot less funny than normal, and even the normal isn't that funny.
Yeah, and you know, turns out my beautiful enunciation was not really very clear at that time, funnily enough. I thought it was perfectly clear at the time. So, should we do some church notices?
Only one that I know of, staying defiantly, is this Thursday, the 18th of April. So there you are, it's coming around quickly. And as far as we know, there are more than two people. So that's great.
Good. Well, I hope that goes very well for you.
Thank you.
I will still be in rehab, obviously. Can't be there.
Yeah.
So how are you?
Well, thank you. I had a lovely weekend with a dear friend and his wife. That was wonderful. Really enjoyed that. And I've had a much better week. It's just been
good.
It's back to sort of sensible levels of work. And that's good. What else? Oh, well, obviously, I think that you may have seen, well, you wouldn't have seen on Facebook, but the link to Let There Be Light, which is a film by Matt and Beth Redman speaking about the Mike Pelavecchi stuff and soul survivor situation, has been doing the rounds. And I watched that, which is, you know, interesting and sad and, you know, mildly depressing, really. Again, just the way abuse often gets overlooked and or not believed, or, you know, sometimes Christian celebrities can seem above it all. And that's sad.
I haven't seen the film, and I'm not sure I will, but is it? What's the motivation behind sort of making it? Why?
I just think there's been a slight shroud of silence around the whole issue. I mean, people know that, you know, Soul Survivor sort of ended and Mike Pilavachi stepped down. I don't think much has been said. I think some people have found his apology a little bit weak. And I think because Matt and Beth had such a close relationship with him, I think they just wanted to speak about how they saw things and what their experiences were through it all. I think it's a helpful thing because for people who have perhaps not come forward or said anything or been afraid to, it might at least encourage them to get a bit of help. So that's good. That's a good thing. I'm sure the motivation is pure and good for that. So that's it. The Tulip Festival. I mean, that did my soul a lot of good. I don't know about you, but just the ridiculous colours in nature. It's just good to be reminded of those at a Tulip Festival.
It was wonderful. So this was the Tulip Festival at Arundel.
Yeah, Arundel Castle. Yeah.
Which is a castle with gardens that sort of encompass most of the town, it seems. In a very democratic kind of way.
Yes, exactly.
No, it was really lovely. The colours were amazing. Yeah. And Yeah, and we've got tulips out here because Claire's planted loads, as you remember.
Yes,
370
indeed.
Bulbs, and they're coming out, so we've got our own little tulip festival in the garden.
Well, that's
beautiful.
That is a marvellous thing. And and the bird of the week this week, I'm going to go for redstart, because a friend of mine in Worthing had a redstart in his garden, which is unheard of because they're normally woodland birds. You don't normally get them just off the seafront. But I guess it's, you know, migrating like you do.
Okay.
That was pretty wonderful. You got a great picture of it. Oh, and so let's just finish with this. The theme. My theme? I've got it.
Okay.
I think I've got it. I'm going to call my theme this year the year of churching. And what I mean by that is, as most of you know, Soul Place ended in January. I sort of thought something, you know, so something has to die before something new emerges. I thought something new is going to emerge. Nothing has emerged yet. I am studying a little bit and thinking about what actually did Jesus mean when he said, I'll build my church, I'll build my ecclesia. We had that conversation, as you know, at the weekend, because I wanted to pick your brains over that. And I think the conclusion we got to was nobody really knows what Jesus meant when he said, I will build my ecclesia. As you know, I've been thinking of church much more as a verb than a noun. So what does churching really look like for me at this stage of my life, at this stage of my journey of faith? So I'll report back as we go through the year. I don't know what it means fully, and partly that's why it's the theme, so I can discover what it means.
I think that sounds really interesting, and you know, I'm sure part of it will be involved in sort of trying out lots of different traditions, for example, and going to lots of church services, I should imagine, in terms of finding out about that. Because that would be churching, wouldn't it?
Is that what you think?
It's just a thought.
Is that what you think it might mean? It's funny, that.
Maybe not. But I think it is a great theme, actually. And I thought at the time, you know, and certainly over the weekend talking to you about it, about exploring different, what that means for you. I think that's really, that's really full of possibilities, that.
Yeah, I think so. So, yeah, stay tuned. We'll see how we go. The year of churching.
Excellent.
There we go. Ow, that's enough. How are you, my friend?
I'm all right. Yes. As I said, had a little visit to the... I went to the doctor's today just for the blood pressure. You know, when you get over a certain age, they want to test your blood pressure every 5 minutes. Just in case you were exploding like a balloon. You know, I don't know. But apparently my blood pressure's okay. But then they said, I hope you don't mind, but we just need to take your weight. And I was going, why do you need that? What? Why? Why? Get out of it. It's none of your business. Because I knew what the effect would be. I didn't say any of that. I just got on. It mercifully wasn't too bad, but you know.
Oh, stop it. You're slim and lovely. You know you are.
No, but after last weekend's the worst possible time to test my weight,
yeah,
I would have thought.
True.
Really? Yeah, so did that. We've had a lot of young people in the house because I had some Martha's friends here. They are art historians, so I had lovely conversations with them about Celtic crosses, actually. Which
is
great.
Good. Wow.
Yeah. So that was nice. Somebody was interested. That was good. I'm enjoying the spring sunshine. It's nice. It's been nice today. It's sunny out there at the moment. It's going to be warm.
Lovely.
Very nice. You know, I mean, obviously, it's still raining.
Yeah, of course it is.
That is the way of this place, the way of this world. And thankful for food. Well, there can be only one winner this week that I'm thankful for. And that is your wife's cookies, your wife's biscuits.
Oh, they are exceptional, aren't they? Yeah.
I don't know if she has shared the recipe, but unless we get that recipe, you can consider this friendship at an end, because I need that.
Cave cookies, ginger something. Granthams, are they called? I don't know what they're officially called, but we call them.
I don't know. They were just great. And with her homemade ice cream. Oh, it's just... She's wasted on you.
I know. Many people have said that.
Anyway, yeah, so Rachel's cookies on my food. I'm very thankful for this.
Well,
week.
She will be thrilled to hear that. Thank you. Great. Well, shall we move on? Let's do some feedback because, we've got a lot to talk about this week. So, firstly, David says, thanks for your thoughts, particularly on grief. The last 12 months has been challenging with a number of family members, aunts and uncles and close friends who are no longer here, while many of them were in their 80s and not unexpectedly taken it. still takes a toll. More challenging from a personal viewpoint is the people I went to school with who died recently. Mm. It does make one reflect on where we are at and where we are going. Tolkien referred to mortality as the gift of men, and for many years I was puzzled and non-understanding of this concept. While my comprehension is still lacking to a degree, the thought of effectively using our 4,000 weeks, or whatever our allocation is, does put value on every day. Yeah, it does. Mm. Thank you, David. Yeah,
and I do think that's right. I think one of the big changes is when you're younger, it's not that people, you know, your friends don't die. I had friends sadly died when I was younger, but it was very much sort of outlier, very, very an oddity. It did, you know.
Yeah, it didn't happen.
And then suddenly you get to our age, or my age, certainly, and your contemporaries start dying, and you realise, oh, I've entered that phase.
It is horrible. Yeah.
But I do think the conclusion there is absolutely, you know, what do you do except make the most of every day that you've got, really?
Yeah. Yeah, exactly right. Exactly right. I'm sure we will reflect, as always, more on these things as we go on. Thank you for that, Dave. Mm. And Kathy said, oh, well, this is important. Yes. Hi, Joe and Nick. One, wanted to add Ukrainian borscht to your list of reasons why we should thank God for beetroot. Said my Ukrainian daughter-in-law has introduced me to the recipe. Yum. Two, and this is for you. So, Nick, why do we call Easter Easter then? I have run an Easter project for year 5 children for several years now, and this question has come up many times. I'm afraid to say my trawl of the internet produced the Ustra, however you spell that, story, including the added bonus of it being a festival of fertility, hence eggs. So she said, please educate me and or us.
Right. I think I've calmed down enough.
Good. Yeah. Just take a deep breath before you answer this.
So we certainly call it Easter. Well, we probably, most likely, call it Easter from that reference in Bede. There was only one reference to this, and it's in the works of Bede. It's in a book called On the Reckoning of Time, written in, I think, the late 8th century, and which is really a book about how you work out the date of Passover and Easter. So but he also gives an account of the Saxon year and the different months, and that's when he says they have this thing called Eostre month, Eostre monath, which he says is to do with this goddess, a goddess. But that's all he says. He doesn't say anything else about her. And this is the only mention of Eostre that we have in any sort of contemporary or near-contemporary literature or engraving. There's nothing.
So Easter is called Easter because of this goddess. I mean, that actual name, its etymology is Eostre.
He said it could be that, or it could be to do with the East. You know, the sun rising in the east and all that kind of stuff, and Jesus's association with the east.
Okay.
Still slurring, but but you know, they're not quite sure. But I think it's likely that it is from that, from that. But you see, the thing is, the point is, all the hares and the rabbits and stuff and the fertility. Mm. That's a guess. We don't know anything about that. The fertility goddess is a guess. Possible, because it's around this time of year, spring, you know.
Yeah.
But all the hare stuff doesn't come until the 19th century at the least. I'll put a link up to an article about it rather than me go on about it. And so that's a complete myth. The point is, we don't know anything else about her. But the real thing is, look, just because something's called the same doesn't mean it is the same. So let's take another example of an Anglo-Saxon a piece of sort of chronology that's got into our language, and that's Tuesday.
Mm.
Tuesday, after presumably a Germanic god Tew, T-I-W, Tuesday.
As in Chewbacca?
Yes, they did in fact worship a large Wookiee. But nobody, I don't know anything about Tew. The point is, when we say, oh, we're having a nice Tuesday, we don't mean I am making sacrifices to the goddess Tew or the god Tew, whoever it was.
No,
it's
just got
that's
a name.
What it's called now. Okay. So even if it is named after Eostre, it doesn't mean that what we do at Easter has anything to do with her and we don't know anything about her.
Okay, well, I think you've made your point. Yeah, okay.
I have made my point, and now I need to calm down again because I'm getting angry.
Good, yeah, no. Well, let me move on. Just to say, she also mentioned the fabulous project, The Long Table, based in Stroud. Have you heard about that project?
No.
Great, and the slogan there is, if you have more than enough, build longer tables, not higher walls. I like that. It's great. She sent a video link to it. It's a wonderful project. Obviously, I'm all for eating in large groups. That's a beautiful thing. Mm. And then Kathy finishes off by saying, I seem to be getting over my angry / grieving / afraid stage of my mid-faith crisis in huge parts, thanks to us. Well, that's nice. And she says, and I am finding that there are people all over the place doing wonderful things, living out God's image where they are. Such an encouraging thing. Much love to you both. Kathy. Thank you, Kathy. That is a wonderful thing, and people are doing wonderful things, so that is true. Okay, I'll move on to Andrew, and this is going to lead us into what we're going to talk about. And Andrew wrote this quite a while ago, actually. He says, hi Joe and Nick, love the podcast and thanks for exploring what's the point of Joe together. So there we are. That tells you when this email came in. Yes.
Still haven't answered that question.
No one has. He said, I particularly resonated with your conversation this week because at 56, I just concluded a 17-year season of pouring myself day in, day out into an organisation that's really doing great things around the world. It appears, though, that I'm now finding myself in Jung's Afternoon of Life and Richard Rohr's Further Journey. So I was grateful to hear you chat about the meaning of or in life and how we might discover that, particularly since my weekdays and weekends, now blurring together for some reason, are more open, offering added flexibility and availability. Time to give, do and be. I never realised how gloriously liberating and throbbingly unsettling this mid-faith crisis meets mid-life crisis season could be. I love that phrase, throbbingly unsettling. Brilliant. Yeah. He says, one's personal sense of meaning in life can seem to become connected, perhaps shackled is a better word, to what we do over the years, our careers, vocations, volunteerings and so on. Is this as madly common around the world as it is here in the US, I wonder? He said, I might in fact be entering life's recovery phase from a case of the doer's affliction. For all the confusion and disorientation mid-faith and mid-life combined can bring, though, it really does seem like a fantastic place to be, a rural train station platform on which to sit on the bench a while and ask the right sort of journeyman questions. Considering partnering with the divine also seems to refreshingly divert the focus from what's my next career move, which friends lovingly, I know, seem to ask me regularly these days. Instead, contemplating the prospect of a deeper encounter and engagement with God seems to blow the barn doors wide open and places myself at the table for a much-needed helping of divine surprise. Like Richard not-so-fluffy-at-times Raw says in his book Falling Upward, which my wife is devouring and I should probably start nibbling at, we need to unlearn a lot. It seems to get back to the foundational life which is hidden in God. Thanks as always, and our very best from the Wild West. And that's from Andrew.
Well, I found that whole message throbbingly unsettling. I don't know about you.
Yes, we're definitely going to be stealing that phrase, Andrew. Thank you.
I'd love it as a review of the podcast, actually. Wouldn't it be great? Yeah. Mid-faith crisis, throbbingly unsettling.
Yeah, maybe we should put that strap line on.
Well, just claim it. Yeah. A lovely phrase, a lovely email as well, and a very kind of positive statement about being in mid-faith crisis. And which is also aligned to a certain sort of midlife time anyway, if not crisis. What we thought we should do is restate the idea of these stages of faith and talk about that, really. So basically, I'm going to sort of quiz Joe on it. But, you know, this is the origin of the podcast lies in, you know, these stages of faith. The idea that you go through different stages of faith at different times of your life or whatever, and that sometimes you can sail serenely through. Sometimes it's a very deep and unsettling place. I mean, Andrew, I think it was, Andrew's email seems to have a wisdom to it and a calmness to it about his mid-faith, which I think is really wonderful. But some people find it a much more desert-like experience, I suppose.
Yeah, when you start questioning the wisdom of the tribe that you've grown up in all your life and you love, and it doesn't, and what they're telling you doesn't seem to work in your life, it is normally quite unsettling, I think, probably for most people. Yeah, you've written about this in your book though as well. We should mention your book here.
Yes, I have written about Dark Night of the Shed, and I think, although that, I suppose that was not so much about faith, but about life itself and about the goals we set and the kind of things which that Andrew was talking about. The other thing that can make it unsettling, I think, is quite often it's accompanied by a very difficult spiritual experience. You know, like we've been talking about the Mike Pilavachi thing or things like that. You know, quite often it's accompanied by disillusionment, damage, you know, even in some extreme cases, a certain level of spiritual abuse. And so, you know, it can be accompanied by some other issues which are, you know, really difficult and hard. But anyway, look, that's the context for it. Joe, I'm going to ask you, because this sort of began with you, outline for us the idea of the stages of faith.
The analogy I think I probably like the most is that of the caterpillar. I think St. Teresa of Avila got there first with the silkworm. You know, this idea that there's a caterpillar that's born onto its environment, a leafy thing, and it's very happy there, growing and enjoying and munching through everything. But there does come this point where, in order for it to become what it truly is, a butterfly, it has to sort of go into this cocoon and have this metamorphosis, this meltdown, I like to think of it as. I'm sure that's not biologically accurate, but, you know, that meltdown where it hangs on to that environment that brought it such nurture and was so good for it in the early stages, but it hangs on by an absolute thread to emerge into the thing that it was always meant to be, which is something that is free to fly and wander far away from its environment, to return to it if it wants to, but, you know, it becomes this new beast. I think in more recent times, a chap called William Fowler did a more academic study on the stages of faith. And I think since we started the podcast, others have written in. Some people have 4 stages, some people have 6, some people have 9 stages of faith. You know, and they obviously, when you talk about it, you do it in a linear fashion, but actually life is never that neat. I don't think so. And Brian McLaren wrote an excellent book, Faith After Doubt. He talked about 4 stages. You may remember: simplicity, complexity, perplexity, and then moving out the other side of those stages into harmony. I think when we first talked about it, I quite liked the 6 stages. And they basically were like the first awakening, that moment where you sort of go to an alpha course and someone explains the gospel to you, whatever it is, and you suddenly think, golly, I thought in my deepest being there must be a God or something, and now someone has explained to me there is a God and I can get to know this God and everything. So that's the sort of first awakening. And then the second stage, you know, the title I liked was Believing and Belonging. That's where you learn the laws. Who's in? Who's out? What do I need to do? What do I need to confess? You know, what's the rules in this tribe of belief that I now want to belong to? And then the third stage, and this is very often the final stage, I think, that we understand in our churches, is service and leadership. You know, once you've learnt the rules, and, you know, you're fully purpose driven and all the rest of it, now is the time for you to get involved. Maybe you become a worship leader, maybe become a youth leader, you're on a mission team, whatever it is. Service and leadership. And generally speaking, that is seen as it. You've arrived, you're at the pinnacle of your powers, you know what you're talking about, you know what it means to believe. But then the next stage, well, I would call the mid-faith crisis. Stage 4 in this scenario. And that is where, slowly but surely, you ask the question, and you put this so well, you know, is this it? You know, I've been doing this for 10 years and it doesn't, you know, there doesn't seem to be life or energy to it. And I've got questions, you know, how come everyone prayed for, you know, my kid who was really sick and the kid died, or, you know, and how come others are giving thanks for finding parking spaces? How does that work? What kind of God is it that would allow that and do those kind of things? And God seems to be very inconsistent. And, you know, if you're female, you might even be asking questions like, why is God so male? Why is he always a masculine God? How do I relate to such a masculine God? I'd like to know more about the feminine side of God, if there is a feminine side to God. So maybe you're affected by illness or redundancy. Maybe there is a proper crisis, a breakdown of a marriage or a relationship in some way. Maybe you are disillusioned by a leader who has done something that seemingly from nowhere, right out of character, and I don't know, there's so many stories, you can fill in the blanks for yourselves. And you start asking these questions that maybe you'd ignored or were too afraid to ask, but now you can't go on further without asking them. And some people at that point, they leave church or they leave faith, or they just decide it was, you know, something for while I was at Sunday school, but it's not something I feel I can carry on into adulthood. But actually, this is always an opportunity. And the beauty of this stage is at the heart of it, I think there's an invitation. You might say an invitation from the divine to not leave faith, but to come to a much deeper, fuller, more authentic faith. Because I think you can get through for a long while with this sort of idolatry, which is, I want God in my life, hallelujah, amen, but on my terms. You know, I don't really want to surrender. I don't really want to deal with the stuff that's deepest within me. I don't want to deal with my character flaws. I don't know how to deal with them. You know, I don't know how to deal with my addictions. I don't know what to, I don't even know if faith can affect those addictions and you know, idiosyncrasies in our character that can sometimes be quite destructive. So the invitation is not to abandon faith, but to see it in a whole new way, as something that actually is transformational, but perhaps isn't as simple as the, I'll just pray a prayer and ask God for forgiveness and that's it. Hallelujah, amen, I'm healed. But there's more of a process to it. And actually, I think you emerge from the other side of the fifth stage that I call moving outward. And it looks like other stages, but you are not doing things from a sense of wanting approval or needing to impress people or needing to fool yourself even. You start doing things out of a sense of, I want to do this because it's good and it's good for me and it's right. And it feels good to do it almost. Mm. Because the way of love is the right way to live. The final stage, I think, in any of these stages, some people call it abiding in Christ. I might call it abiding in love, whatever it is. But you have accepted yourself. You have been honest with yourself. You no longer feel the need to compare yourself or dislike yourself or, you know, impress others or do anything. It's a radical stage of, I think, deeper, perhaps contentment with who you are. And that's a beautiful thing. And I have to say, I don't think anyone ever lives perfectly in any of these stages. I think we cycle around them and we get glimpses of it. I've certainly had glimpses of abiding in love and it's beautiful. I'd love to say I live there all the time. But of course, you know, the old insecurities creep up and strangle me from time to time and, you know, all kinds of things get in the way. But that's the direction of travel, through the sort of complexity and through the perplexity to a faith that is content not to have all the answers, that embraces mystery, that, you know, it's just takes that all on and can live with the contradictions. How's that?
What
are you bored? Are you still there?
I'm not bored. I'm just thinking. I think we can end the podcast. No, what I was thinking of while you were taking us through it was, you know, we talk about it in terms of faith, but I think this journey is sort of really existence in many respects.
Yeah,
it's all kinds of things you can apply it to. Because I was thinking, I used to, you know, teach a lot on writing and stuff like that. And you used to think about a hero's journey, which I used to kind of talk about as a call, rise, fall, surprise.
Yeah.
So it's kind of like the hero is called into action, called out of one place into another. And they rise. At first, it seems to go really well and they seem to get some successes. And then there's always a fall. There's always a moment when you are strapped to the table and Goldfinger is pointing a laser at your most important parts and all this kind of stuff and saying, ah, I'm going to kill you, Mr. Bond. You know, and then there's a surprise, which is the twist, which is how you get out of it and or whatever.
Yeah.
So there's that thing in stories, but I think it's true in biblical terms. You know, I was thinking in terms of Peter's story that the same thing works out. The call, you know, follow me, the rise where he becomes sort of the keenest and the most outspoken and always charging in. And he does things that none of the other disciples do.
Yeah.
He walks on water, for heaven's sake.
None of the others did
that. He at least did a few steps. And he says, you are the Christ. And then that dreadful fall when he
denies Christ,
loses everything and he lies and he says, I never knew him. And then the surprise comes round the other way when Jesus recalls him, as it were.
Yeah.
And his relationship is different. And after that, clearly in his sort of character, he becomes, I think, a different person. I mean, one of the key things about Peter is that he was never the leader of the church. You know, I mean, the idea that he was a bishop of Rome is not true. And I don't want to upset anybody, but not attested. But anyway, I don't think he ever had a position of leadership. Official leadership of the church, because he wasn't that kind of guy actually anymore.
Yeah.
You know, and he had to recognize that. And some of the stories in the Gospels about him must have come from him, I suppose, if you think they're historically true. And so therefore he's willing to share that vulnerability, share that fall. So there's a strength there. So I think that it's not just about faith, it's about our lives, our relationships, who we are, understanding ourselves, so that at some point there will be this, I can't remember, there is a word that Tolkien coined for it, which is the good fall, you know, the thing that actually leads to something better.
Yeah.
But it's very, very hard to see that at the time.
Well, Richard Rohr calls it falling upward, because that's the paradox, that actually what looks like the disaster of your life, what looks like the thing that's ended you, that's wrecked you, that has totally actually ends up doing the very thing that launches you into the second half of life. And I think that's, you know, the wonderful paradox.
So let's look at just briefly at the kind of those sort of some of those end phases, because I think I think the earlier phases are fairly clear. But what I'm interested in, I think a lot of people realise when they're in mid faith crisis. A lot of people realise when they've descended, when they've had the fall and whatever. Yeah. What do you think are the kind of signs that you might be emerging? Because I think that's a question we've had in the past. You know, people said, "How do I know when it's over? Is it ever over?" And I think that's the other thing about this journey, to some extent, is always an iteration. It's always going round and round.
Yeah.
But what do you think are some of the signs that, okay, things might be moving into a different phase now?
Yeah. I think one of the classic symptoms of mid-faith is that you're angry. You're very angry.
Mm.
You're probably really angry with yourself, but actually you project out on the church, the stupid church, the ridiculous church, the stupid preaching and worship and everything, blah, 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 blah. This is ridiculous. This is rubbish. I think one of the signs you're emerging is you don't carry that anger anymore. You're okay, because you accept that once you used to find it really helpful and other people still are finding it really helpful, you can't understand that because you think they're being hoodwinked, I think, sometimes. But actually, I think how you know you're coming out of it is you're actually happy that people are really enjoying it. And really loving those things that you don't find helpful anymore, but they really are finding it helpful. And you start to understand there are stages and you're in a different stage to them, but that doesn't make them wrong and you right. It just means they're at a different stage. You know, just like a child goes through the toddler stage and then the slightly old childlike stage and teenage stage and young 20-something and then, you know, middle age and old age and all the rest of it. There's a journey here. And you need different things for different stages of the journey. And you accept that. So I think that's one point. And another thing, I think you get less defensive.
Yeah.
I used to always be worried, you know, I've got to have the right theology. Got to, because I've been told I've got to have the right theology. I've got to be able to defend what I believe in. Well, have you? I mean, have you? that's a very serious question. That's not flippant.
It depends, really. If it's about Eostre, yes, you have got to defend it.
Yeah,
if it's about historical facts, yes. Anything else, up for grabs.
I mean, to put it bluntly, I think the God I used to believe in actually doesn't exist. That's what I think. Yeah, I think I saw God as an object who was out there And, you know, I'm a created being, and that's the connection. There's no sort of sense of the divine in me and me and the divine. There's none of that going on. There's, and God was a masculine and male authoritarian, slightly disappointed in me, verging on the very disappointed from time to time. At best, it was only slightly disappointed. And of course it was, because you've not got to read much psychology to understand transference and how you push onto God your own parents and blah, 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 blah. I may be wrong. God may be very angry for me. But if God is like that, God is not the sort of strike you down with lightning God. I do know that, because I would have been struck down a long time ago if that was the case. So I think that's the thing. Sort of having a growing confidence to acknowledge that the God you used to believe in doesn't exist. I think you do start to think, oh, God's not out there. God is here. And you approach the Bible, well, in my case, in my journey of faith, far less literally. It's still very true, and the stories in them are true, and they're there for our guidance and to learn wisdom from, but they don't have to be literally true, literal historical facts to necessarily. So that's been my journey, but that might not be everybody's journey.
What I'm picking up a few things here. Right? One is that there's a certain level of which you are almost sort of manifesting the classic fruits of the Spirit.
Yes.
You know, there's a patience there, and a love and a kindness, and you know, self-control and all those. And I can't remember what the other one was. It was chocolate, wasn't it? And
I believe so.
You know, sort of. Anyway, there's a sense of things have changed. Your attitude has literally changed. I would say the next thing would be that undefensiveness, that need, that no longer need to sort of win things, because you don't maybe think it's about that anymore. I think that's quite common. And that might be linked in with certain other theological beliefs or ways of looking at things. I think that can often help. You know, that's part of
it. One of Mr. Brown's principles, you know, when given the choice between being right and being kind, choose kind. And I think for me, the evidence of the divine is kindness and patience. And so I feel inclined to spend less time on kind of cerebral faith, you know, concepts from people who are very academic and clever. And I'm not saying they're not invalid. They are valid. But I look at people and I genuinely, I suppose, I want to be like people who are kind and loving. I don't want to be like people who know it all.
Well, that's our relationship finishing, isn't it?
And the mission of Jesus, I do see as critiquing religion, really, really getting us back to, can we just remember what religion is for? It's not about all these festivals and everything. It's about justice and kindness and love and inclusion. And, you know, that gets you in trouble in one or two churches, I know, but my reading of the Gospels, you know, has taken me there. And I do recommend reading the Gospels and trying to see Jesus outside of what you've always been taught, and just try and see Jesus for yourself.
And the third thing that I think I pick up on, or maybe it's a principle here, is a sense of the presence of God and the closeness of the presence of God and the loving presence of God. Now, however you see that, so you were talking, for example, about the Bible. I think it's almost irrelevant in a way how you choose to view the Bible. Maybe it's not irrelevant, but that's not the most important thing. It's not a necessary part of the mid-faith crisis that you have to reject scripture. That's not at all it. You know,
right.
I think what people find is that it speaks to them in a different way.
Yeah.
And that actually, that too is a place, is holy ground. That, and we've talked about this a lot, and that too is places where you can encounter God. So you become maybe more used to encountering God outside of what you used to. It's not saying you wouldn't. For me, it's still, church is important, communion is important, and that's still a place of encounter. But there are other places of encounter as well. Yeah. It's not limited to that. So I think those three things, you know, that sense of a changed perspective and you know, a different set of attitudes, the openness and less defensiveness, and the sense of the God's presence are three really good indicators that you might be coming into your butterfly stage.
Yes.
And this is why, you know, one of the most important spiritual books in the world is The Hungry Caterpillar.
Yes, exactly.
Because
right.
It is summing up this journey. You know, so listen, we really need to wrap it up. But I think this has been a useful sort of primer again to really the fundamentals of what the mid-faith crisis is all about.
And what this podcast is all about, furthermore.
Indeed. And if you're in Andrew's position, as we've kicked it off, seemed quite wise, relaxed, you know, excited about it, that's terrific. Sometimes people are in other situations of bewilderment and fear and anger and disappointment, disillusionment, and that's a hard place to be. I've remembered the Tolkien word, by the way.
Oh, yeah.
The word he coined was eucatastrophe. And it's spelled EU catastrophe. I don't know if he was a Brexiteer. Who knows? But anyway, EU is the Greek word for good, meaning good. The good catastrophe.
Okay.
And I think that would be my prayer for anyone going through this, that actually whatever level of catastrophe it is, that there would be a goodness in it and a sense of journey and there would be hope there for you.
Yeah, exactly right.
So listen, thank you very much for being with us.
Thank you.
Thank you to everyone who supports the podcast. As ever, that's lovely. We really appreciate that. Mm. Thank you to those who write in. Do write in to us with your thoughts and your ideas and your experiences of mid-faith crisis. We'd love to hear that.
Yeah.
And send your emails to...
Yeah, joe@midfaithcrisis.org. And we really do love to hear it because it's encouraging for other people to know you're not the only ones in the world going through this. So please, you know, send us your stories. We'll get through as many as we can. It's lovely to hear them. Thank you.
And we will be back with you next week, I think.
Yes, we will.
I don't know doing what. Thought that far ahead, really.
No, I do. Might have an interview. Have I told you about the interviews I'm doing? Got some great interviews coming up.
Oh, why do I only find out about these things on the actual podcast?
Well, you never even asked. If you'd asked, I'd have told you.
Okay. Well, anyway, we'll be back with you next week.
See you next week.